I was involved in the beginning of what can be considered the Right to the City movement in Berlin, meaning we, from a more academic point of view or background, started the first Right to the City conference here in Berlin and, you know, tried to introduce this as a new way of bringing together concerns and struggles that take place in the city and to find a new way of, you know, communicating across different scenes that have been out there and struggling for a long time, dating back to the squatter movement and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, so that's where I was engaged in. And then this kind of like switch to what I think is now one of the most dominant or, well, important struggles taking place in Berlin from a radical perspective, which is focused on housing, the rising cost of housing or rents, because Berlin is a city of renters. So most of the city lives in flats that they pay, you know, rent for. And these costs have been exploding in the recent years. And that has been the subject of new forms of struggles and movement activism in Berlin for the last years. I think the struggles around rising rents, cost of housing, are the focus of most of radicalism in Berlin right now. So there has been a series of demonstrations for the last couple of years with a lot of people, which I think really re-strengthened or showed a re-strength of what has been movement activism in Berlin. Because prior to that, we had a lot of struggles. So end of the 90s, beginning of the 2000s, there was a lot of like what you would consider radical activism, which was concerned about the formerly squatted houses, so all those projects, because we in Berlin still do have a very extensive alternative infrastructure, if you want to call it that way. So there's a lot of places where, you know, prefigurative politics and, you know, other forms of dealing and living, and also these are places where, you know, movements start from. So there was a lot of struggle around that because they were threatened, of course. And the struggle for rents or against rising rents has been a way of reframing some of those struggles in a way which I think is really a good way, because it started to kind of like cross or make more porous the borders of, you know, what is radical activism, which often tended to be a little bit more isolated in its own scene. So you have like demonstrations where, you know, people rally in the streets and make visible themselves. However, the gap between that sort of activism and what the rest of the urban society of the city does and suffers from has been strong or sharp, right? And the rising rent movement is a very particular, and I think, as I said, a very good way, because it all in a sudden involved and made itself open to a wider range of people. So for the last 2 years or so, a new kind of like, you know, activism emerged or got strengthened or became more visible, and they found a common voice. And they came together in this rising rent struggle. So there's not only any more punks and anarchists who live in, you know, their little, I don't want to belittle them, but who live in their houses and projects, but other, you know, segments of populations who are affected by this shared problem, which is rising costs of housing and living, came together, including migrant families and elderly people and people from the formerly public housing estates. And these sorts of struggles found a common denominator. And I think it's not an accident that this happened, because Berlin is a city where a lot of people come to and a lot of people live. And it's also a poor city, right? But the struggle about jobs or, you know, employment, which is difficult in Berlin, it's not a place where you get rich easily, because a lot of people are unemployed or live on very precarious jobs, even though they try to make it fun one way or the other, but others struggle to do that. But rising cost of housing is a shared denominator of all those people, and thus it brings together different segments of people.
In your opinion, how could people, also new in relation to the movement or the city, can take part in the political actions in Berlin? You said it might be easier now than a few years ago. Do you have more ideas how it could be made more possible to make it easy for people to join the movement?
Well, it's hard to talk about the movement, right? Because there's always various movements. And in particular in Berlin, Berlin is, if you want to call it that way, a movement city, because it always, or for long, had a wide array of different movements, from anti-fascists to anarchists, you know, to squatters and all lesbian and gay movements and all sorts of stuff, right? So Berlin is a city where people, and actually a lot of people do that, who come from other places in Germany, but also from Europe and abroad, Europe, and find actually rather easy entry points into what you can call the movements, plural, right? So, because we have all those different houses and projects and different meeting and venue points for if you are already somewhat, you know, on a mindset that you would consider yourself a radical, you find fruitful ways of, you know, integrating yourself and becoming active. But as I mentioned before, I think now it's actually even easier for people who are not maybe in this particular scene or in this, you know, lifestyle, because the issue of, you know, how to live in the city and how much do I have to pay in order to live in the city, that is becoming or has become the topic of the movements. And there is, it's really remarkable to see how, what kind of different people get, you know, engaged in this kind of movement. Because the movement against rising rents pretty much kind of like ranges from, you know, your radicals on the streets who are, you know, anti-systemic working and doing things of that sort, but also people who try to, you know, enter politics and who, you know, work, so to speak, as an outer parliamentary oppositional group or lobby group even, right? So there's people who entered into a dialogue with the Berlin Senate and, you know, try to find new ways of, you know, lowering rents, you know, making concrete, albeit partial, you know, successes or, you know, compromises. So there's this entire range which is now open and which kind of like still comes together, because the beautiful thing is that so far there has not been a divide, you know, between, you know, anti-systemic and more in inverted commas reformist groups, but they all, you know, keep in line or are staying together. They don't let themselves divide. So therefore I think by now we do have a wide possibility or wider possibility for people to get engaged in, you know, changing the way we live.
In Berlin there's also this nowadays, I don't know how old the group of activists is, but like 15M Berlin, I suppose lots of Spanish people are a part of that. What do you think, what can the movement in German or Berlin or German-speaking areas learn from the movements that are active and that are born in the recent years in Spain? And also, how do you see the activities that 15M Berlin has made until now in Berlin, if you are, if you have followed that group?
Well, I haven't been to Spain for a long time, so, and I only know the things about Spain from third parties, so from other activists and researchers who told me about Spain. But what I think is most remarkable about Spain is that it is a manifestation of, you know, and the name Indignados expresses that, right? Of this indignation that makes people, that do people do feel, they are enraged, they are frustrated, and, you know, and angry about the failed promises that the system created for them now. And they found ways of responding to that in common, right? So that's where you have those assemblies, and they found ways of dealing with this mass unemployment, and where, you know, so many hopes and dreams so clearly shattered, right? It's just recently that I saw on a presentation by a woman who was working on the Indignados in Spain, and she had this a picture of this poster where they it was said, what was it? I never dream, or I, you, no, it was a slogan, and it said, you will never have a home on your own, right? So this entire dream that, or hope that was nurtured in the last years, that, you know, you can become a homeowner and become, you know, a member of society, and, you know, you can live well and all that stuff, that sort of like bubble really burst in Spain more clearly than in other countries. And the beautiful thing about Spain is that they found ways of, you know, bringing those individual sufferings together and find ways of, you know, communicating that and articulating and developing a voice. And I think that is what, you know, what's inspiring of Spain for the rest of Europe, even though the situation is different, because unemployment is on a larger scale, especially in contrast to Germany.
And also the actions against forced evictions in Berlin, do they have Spanish roots?
No, I don't think so. I think it's kind of like a response that developed in Berlin as well as it developed in Spain, because it's, you know, it's the same. So it's no accident that a similar response developed.
We have been part of the Blockupy days for the 2 years Blockupy has existed, and we have came from Finland, and the way we have participated was making video reports to Finland about that, and we sometimes faced some difficulties in filming in the demonstrations and in interviewing people, and we thought that, well, but that making videos is most urgent in order to try to make the movement Europe-wide and to let people know what is happening and so on. So we were a little bit amazed that the German activists were not totally willing to let us do our, let's say, media activism. And in Spain we have had totally different experiences. The filming is a central way of everyday activism. So what do you think, why is it not that easy in Germany to film during concrete activism, during demonstrations?
Well, that has much to do with the way police is surveilling activism. And we have a long struggle in Germany against the way police is surveilling demonstrations. So they have started, and probably that's the same in Finland and in Spain, you know, where whenever there's a demonstration, then there's like a cohort of police, you know, walking aside, and then they have their little cameras and they film everything. So, and those films do then get used in trials afterwards. So that's why people are rather allergic against being filmed, because of the fear of that being used against them in courtrooms. I suppose that's the main reason why people are rather hesitant to be filmed, because that's evidence.
What do you think about jumping to the final questions, 12 and 13? Mm-hmm. So first, I'd ask just the most generic question, because it's always nice to hear answers for this one. So how would you describe at the moment the most central problems of our capitalistic society?
Yeah, when I read this question, I was thinking, well, hello, what kind of question? It's capitalism, stupid. But that actually, I think it's true, but I think we have to go a little bit deeper into the thing. And I only have, like, you know, my own thoughts of and loose ends, and I can't really put them together. But what I think is challenging and really problematic right now is that while we are in the most recent global crisis, you know, we still have, you know, societies, and particularly in Germany, where trust is still, you know, it's present. You know, people are kind of like in a state of denial, I think, you know, because it's tough to realize that the welfare state, in particular in Europe, that we lived in, are maybe not that anymore. And then how to respond to that. And I think it's still, you know, the hope for that, those expectations that we grew up with and that our parents, you know, lived all their life through, that they might be still valid, you know, and we don't want to give them up, because anything else is worse. It's hopelessness, right? So that, I think, is... that's the main problem of now, how to, you know, what to do with this kind of, like, you know, fearful middle class and lower classes as well, or like working classes as well, who have, you know, no real hope for anything better, and only try to at best to defend what they think is, you know, a good way out. So, and unfortunately, we do see the old games and techniques of, you know, divide and rule being operative in Europe as well. You know, we can go on from, you know, all sorts of the old game of we versus them, or us versus them, from fascism, like the rise of neo-fascist movements in all sorts of countries, and also a resurgence of classism, right, of the lower classes being somewhat, you know, it's their own fault or what have you, and we don't want to fall as low, and without realizing that you might be almost as low already. And I think that's the main challenge of now, of how to deal with, you know, a system which is deeply in crisis but doesn't respond to that as a crisis.
One more last question to our listeners. What would you say to our listeners who wonder how they could participate in the, well, let's say, in the building of a new world without, well, everything, debt, shame, repression, poverty, unequalness, all that we are suffering at the moment? If there are people with a question mark in their head, What can I do right now in order to get active in constituting better futures?
Well, I think it relates to what I said earlier. It really requires us to ask those questions of, you know, where do we live in, or what's the kind of, like, situation that we live in, and asking those questions, and how much do we still believe in those promises of, you know, the good life that are presented to us, where you still have, you know, all the advertising and all the promises of, you know, this is the way out. And these promises seem to work to some point, but we have to question them and kind of, like, try to challenge them. And I think the main question of now is trying to find new ways of articulating the good life. You know, the old question, like, what's the good life? Because in the current situation, in particular in Germany or in Europe, you could say, in the welfare state, post-welfare state situation, we are required to find ways of good life that are not only the defense of what we knew as welfare states, because, you know, to reclaim and to defend the ways the welfare state provided some kind of like balance and some kind of equality, we have to realize, and I think most people do, that these are actually also problematic because of all their paternalism and what have you, and the nationalism that that they're built up with, right? And the real challenge is of trying to find ways of what we do think is, you know, the right way of living, and to then find ways of finding, you know, common ground on that. Trying to find common ground in terms of what are our common interests and who are we, and that you can only develop in, you know, in trying and in articulating and in practicing. And I guess that's where the theme of the commons that is discussed now in various circles is kind of like helpful, because it offers a language of, you know, trying to find ways of not only thinking of and developing claims for what should be, but actually practicing things, you know. So to bridge this gap of, you know, our images of what we would like to have to what and where we are right now. So it's kind of like this pragmatic realism, but also utopianism. So to kind of like, you know, find new mixes of that. So that, I think, is what we are all asked now. And everybody has to ask those questions for herself in the now, and then to find ways of, you know, discussing that and living that with somebody else and others. And then maybe finally we also then have to realize, I guess, you know, once we find common ground with others, like the ones we are with, to realize who's against that, right? So it's not going to be an entirely peaceful and solution or way out, and it's going to be entirely contradictory. And I think we have to find ways of, you know, developing visions and utopias of now and for now, which are capable of integrating all those, all this messy ground of the contradictory life that we're in, without, you know, losing hope, but not getting lost in hope either.
Yeah. Oh, one more short question. If there are people from outside Germany who would like to come to Berlin, and they have this thing in thought in their mind that, goddamn, in Berlin they hate hipsters and they hate tourists, and I don't dare to go there. They just think I'm an asshole. What do you say for those? Should they come bravely and walk the streets of Neukölln proudly and meet new people, or what?
Well, of course, in Berlin as well, there has been some kind of, like, you know, discussion going on about this battle against the hipster, and I think there is good ground to argue that, you know, to devalue and to make enemies out of people because of the way they dress and the way they behave and also the way they consume, you know, is not really any kind of like solution, because we only pinpoint against each other, you know, the ways. It's kind of like lifestyle versus lifestyle, and that doesn't solve much, I think. So it diverts from the real question, which is, it's not the problem that people drink latte or that they buy, you know, or pay for high rents because they're used to even higher rents in New York or wherever, right? But the main challenge it poses actually is to address those systems that make rents rise the way they do, and, you know, that make the difference of who's a capable of affording a cafe latte in this area or that area, right? So that's, I think, and if you want to come to Berlin, and if you think you look like a hipster or you are a hipster, then I guess you just like are challenged, I would say, to rethink the way you live and the way you consume, and that you can do in Berlin as well as in any other place.
Thank you.
We are sitting here in Robert's balcony with Robert in Berlin Neukölln at Reuterstraße. Robert, what do you think? What is most urgent of the radical movements in Berlin right now? So what is happening and what should be happening in the radical Berlin movement?
Yeah, there are several issues that are try to be dealt with by several organizations, actually. And like, for instance, like I don't know, like you might have heard, like there's a lot of things happening with rents going up here in Berlin, like the so-called gentrification has been a part of Berlin like social dynamics for a while now, so prices are going up, and so people try to organize in like neighborhoods and try to oppose those powers, so to speak, like where like flats are privatized and sold to rich investors. So that's a big part of the movement on trying to mobilize against this procedure. Also, what's very important is like what is at hand now is the energy discussions about like how energy from that is provided by the Stadtwerke, so called, like by the big commune or owned companies, but they are like they are supposed to be privatized also. So there's a movement against that, against the privatization of energy resources, like who provide electricity, because that's very important too. And what's also pressing is water supply. Like the water supply is also organized by the commune, like owned by the city. It's a city company, and there had been a big like struggle to privatize them and sell those water supply facilities, and there had been like secret negotiations that had been going on, and like the people have tried to make them more public, and they reached a kind of like success for this. So the contracts that have been signed secretly are now public, and so the city is trying to buy the facilities back, and so that's a big part of politics happen here also. Well, and I don't know, like there's been lots of the confusion going on. Like the organizations who try to, or the movements are that try to oppose the ongoing privatization and rising in prices of all kinds of stuff, like living space, electricity, water supply, all those kinds of stuff that I mentioned before. They are still not really well organized. So because like people are not so much aware, maybe, or like they don't care. Like, what's most important, what's going on is like the people seem to be diverse or like distracted by so many issues, like that they are like trying to struggle with their own lives, and. And it's kind of difficult to make those radical movements be more like forceful. So so to speak.
And what would you say about the near past? What has changed in the movement in Berlin, in the political activism, in, I don't know, let's say, in the past 10 years? Mm. You have been living here also at least for 10 years now. So what sort of a change have you seen?
I think radical movements are much less present there have been some evictions going on of house projects, like houses that had been occupied before by people and then like they got evicted, and people are much more frustrated, I think, and the movements that I spoke before of, they're kind of coming from the more middle class sections, like people who were like really radical. There have been a lot of setbacks in the last couple of in the last decade, so they had not experienced a lot of support, so they're kind of scattered, I would say. And it makes it very hard to find an ongoing growth in radical perspective. So that's kind of sad, actually.
Let's stay in Berlin for a little while longer. What do you think, how can people who are new in relation to the movements and also in relation to the city could take part in the political actions in Berlin? Is there something that could be improved in this sense?
Yeah, I think as I might have indicated before, it's important to talk to one another, to take part in one another's life, like really share information, like be more focused, so to speak, focused on the issues, like rents, for instance, and like push those investors back in their attempt to privatize. So that's what people, I think, could be more active in. I would love this to happen. I would like this to happen. But in order to make this happen, I think that there should be like more public publicity, like really ongoing, like open discussions happening. I mean, there are those things are happening, but they're still kind of like very, very limited in space, or like very local, and kind of, I would say, like reduced, and they're very precise or very like politically ideologically closed dynamics or ideology. Like they're kind of like stick to themselves, sort of like they have like their own language, so that's very like hard to get into, like, oh, that's like not very like inviting, maybe, because it's very 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 focused on individualistic or like group orientated needs. Like what I think it's not happening so much as like the transparency or like to generalize the problem, like, and make more connectable. It's a little bit inconsumerable or something. It's not intelligible so much, and that makes it hard for people to actually get be interested in those kind of movements, because like they they feel excluded.
Berlin is loved not only by the investors, but also by many young people all around Europe, not only Europe, also by me,
yeah.
Not from Berlin originally. And these young people from other European countries or from southern Germany might get some, let's say, negative attention sometimes in Berlin. And do you... So I mean that they are sort of put together with the gentrification, so to say. Do you see this as a problem?
Yeah, I think that I mean, like, what do you love about Berlin, for instance? Like, this is like very, it's very important, like, to distinguish between very materialistic oriented investors who like just want to make profit and are much more concerned about like their own like pocket to get bigger, so to speak, and also that there are people who just want to experience the ongoing like openness which is still there, like in exploring the life of Berlin, which is also like always had been very cultural or multicultural. And that's so like yeah, like it depends, like for instance, like what do you love about Berlin, like I think that's like what do you want, like I think from my perspective, I would not judge anybody who comes here by like just say, oh, are you pushing up prices and stuff? Like, I mean, like this is of course a problem, so to speak. Like when people come from other parts of Europe, who they experience to be much more intense in the meaning of like what rent prices are, and they come to Berlin and they say, oh, it's still cheap here. Although people who live in Berlin for a long time, they're like, okay, now it's not cheap anymore if people come here, and like they are like easily convinced to pay much higher rent because they kind of they are still comparably cheap to other places in Europe. So that's kind of like it's a problem. Yes, like there's also like the need of ongoing discussions about gentrification in this sense, that people who come here need to know that there's that space is not limited by there's like there's enough space to live in, but it's not equally shared, or like there's not equal possibilities to share space. I mean, like it's always dependent on how you're willing to pay for a flat, for instance, if you want to live here. And I think this is part of the problem of the political movement in Berlin, also like to make this more transparent and organized with people who come here and like have an ongoing discussion or established discourse about like being open to new people and also problematize the ongoing process of gentrification.
Let's move on to the German level. How would you describe, let's say, contemporary German activism?
Diverse. It's like it's always... That's a very overgeneralized question. Like, activism is, this depends on how what kind of focus you want to discuss now. It's like, there's a lot of like right wing organizations also, like they're kind of making move forward, like getting more accepted in politics, like more elaborate, not like the so to speak, stupid Nazis. They're also there, But like, what I think is more a problem is like the sophistication of nationalism that has happened like in the past years, where like the big parties, political parties in Germany, they kind of occupy the right wing movement's arguments, but they like intellectualize them and make them more like accessible and on common grounds for the public. And that's why, kind of what I'm afraid is happening a lot. Like activism is been done by extremists on one side, right-wing extremists, and also radical left-wing movements, like who are kind of oppose those right-wing extremists, and also are struggling with opposing the more elaborate nationalism that has been established by big parties in Germany. So it's very diverse. Yeah, the activism is like it's still. Yeah, I mean, like, it's an ongoing battle, so to speak.
And if we focus on the German anti-capitalistic movements, how would you describe them? Or do you see, are there any certain problems right now, German-wide, that should be solved?
Yeah, German-wide should be solved. Like, one of the biggest problems, I would say, is still how refugees are being dealt with. So, if you look at, I forgot to mention this. Like, if you look in Berlin, for instance, like there's like a big refugee camp in at Kottbusser Tor or near Oranienplatz, on the Oranienplatz right now, and they have like very radical ideas or like they have urges, like needs and claims, like they're very radical claims. What should be done, and they don't get a lot of support. Not even by like sometimes they get criticized even by left-wing movements, for instance, so to speak, because like they say like we don't eat until you fulfill our demands, and they're being criticized for their radicality, because it's going that's called like they're not open for negotiation. I would say like how could you be open for negotiations if it's about like a very if they want to underline or make it very clear that their human right to be here or like have the freedom to move anywhere they like is being kicked upon, or they've been dealt with a lot of disrespect. So and I think that is also a very very urgent problem, like how the German politicians are not like on the big scale and also like on the like more localized grounds taking seriously into an account that people who've been through a lot and being discriminated against not just materialistic like because of their like incapacity of having lots of money, also because like they have a different color. So there's a lot of racism going on still, even in the left movements, so to speak. And that has not been very clear yet. Like, it is not, there's, it's still a process, like, to make it, more clear, like, okay, those demands are justified. And they just need to be fulfilled. Also, like they're not taken seriously so much, I think. And so that's also because that's why they kind of choose to say, okay, we are in a hunger strike now, and until our demands, which are actually kind of like understandable if you think of the perspective of the ones who suffer from discrimination, like they just say, like, oh, we want every refugee to be have the right of movement, that like we don't want any residenzpflicht, so to speak. Like it's a kind of law that demands any refugee to stay in a certain district, and they don't have the right to move freely. They have to be they have to be present at this in this local area all the time. And they say, look, this needs to stop. And they don't get so much support. And that makes them even more radical. And that actually leaded to them choosing hunger strike. And they get criticized by all kinds of people and say, oh, that's not the right way, because you actually destroy all the process they already made. You can't be so. You need to be patient. And to ask somebody who's really living on no safety grounds, to ask of them to be patient is very, very disrespectful, I would say. And then it's also cynic.
Something that has happened in the recent years in Germany is Blockupy Frankfurt, the Action Days of Frankfurt. I think that has happened this year and the year before. Do you think that Blockupy Frankfurt could play a central role in organizing the European movements?
I mean, like, of course, it has played a central role already, I think, to kind of connect people, forming an institution for that can transport media transparency about what activism is and what problems are that are of concern of all the people. And so I think it's a step in the right direction. Like, there needs to be more of those things happening all kind of city. Would be nice to as I said before, what is actually important is to have a more to have more safety or more solid attempts to form organizations that are open to provide a dynamic to connect people. Yeah, and to not leave them alone in struggling.
And what do you think, or what else could happen? What sort of concrete actions could take place in the European framework? What could be the next step, or what other things could happen?
I think it depends on how many people are getting organized and how radical their demands are. I think that's and radical demands, I would say, you could question capitalism on a very basic grounds, or what attack used to start with was we just tax differently. We have needed more we need to what is the term? I am missing an English term now. Das heißt verteilen. Verteilen. Redistribute, yeah. So attack used to have this more tax oriented redistribution of wealth theme, and I think redistribution of wealth is a very it's still very, very important, and it could like happen like very radically to ask why are resources like distributed the way they are, and who has access to them, and why is it this way? And we want it differently, so we need to change. We need to make a change in laws, and to make the legislative more, much more stronger. Which also means like question like how the legislative is structured right now, and also like then question administrative politics, and so like for instance like they have like the discussion about democracy and like do we live in a democracy, what is the democracy structured, like how is it structured. So, and I wouldn't say like that we have a lot of democratic elements in our democracy, and there, so but if you want to go there, then you need a lot of people to ask have these questions on their minds and ask them in a very radical way. I think that could happen, but it's always more powerful if this, of course, if this is like coming from the masses, like from the streets. And this is always a question of organization, of how they are organized.
Let's go to the final questions. My favorite one first. And it sounds like this. How would you describe the most central problems of our capitalistic society?
Okay, that's like... I think I've mentioned this, like... Or, like... That was... I indicated it a little bit that I think this is a lot about like the distribution of resources and having access to possibility of like organizing like life. That is referring to resources, of course, because we live in a very materialistic driven society. And I mean, always like who has the access to resources? This is always the most common question, and I think this is one of the most important problems to be dealt with. And like from this point, there a couple of questions derive from, and like debt, for instance, is a very important subject. Like we are living we are in an ongoing crisis. Capitalism has been it's coming clear, so to speak, that capitalism itself is the problem. It's not the crisis in the capitalism, because like we are now in crisis for like 5 years, a continuous crisis. So like I think that people, it's becoming more aware that this crisis will not be over ever until we end capitalism. So like the common lie is like, oh, we just need to be like we just have to repair the little mistakes in the system. And you could take a look in America, for instance, like in the United States, of course, like I'm not just reducing America to the United States, but I meant the United States. So there's like the biggest, like most powerful institution of the world. One of the most powerful institutions is the Federal Reserve, the bank that is a central bank, which is private, and they have like been given the task to make the economy more better, like. Actually growing again and more sustainable, but they have little instruments to do that. Like the only thing they can do is like have an influence on monetary policy, like reducing interest rates, which they have done, and to make money cheaper for the banks, of course, they get credit. So that this is like an it's a very pro-capitalistic, a very strong pro-capitalistic attempt or force they're using. This one and the even more pro-capitalistic force is like to buy back debt that cannot be paid by the banks, for instance. Like they, like the Federal Reserve, for instance, like even buy stocks, and again in an unlimited supply for like they can because they have total control about the monetary policy, and then it's like, if you understand that actually a central bank has very little instruments to provide for the people. Because they are actually they provide for the economic system on a general account, which always goes for the ones who have more. Like not like the instruments of the central banks, they don't distinguish between the poor and the rich. Like they always go with like on the broader scale of the capitalistic system itself. So debt, for instance, is be dealt with by printing even more money and reducing the value of money. So if you reduce the value of money, you also reduce the value of debt, which makes like you can make the debt disappear by just printing more money, which also means like that you kind of like reduce the amount of value, for instance, a proletarian has to sell. Is the only thing that he has because he doesn't have any any capitalistic means. He only has his working power, and he like by printing more money, like the value of the labor is also reduced. But then at the end, like the human being who is dependent on his work, on his like. Physical labor capabilities has no means to make his life sustainable anymore.
As the last question, I would like to ask for our listeners of our Totuus Radio program, what would you like to say to our listeners who wonder how they could participate in the building of a new world without debt and shame, capitalistic repression, all that is involved in that.
Organize. I mean, like, listen to each other, like, be, like, very careful with judgment on an individualistic level, like, be, like, more... understanding of one another means like sharing perspectives is important, and like find common grounds and common language to communicate and fight on.
Thank you for the interview, Robert.
You're welcome.